yes. Ken Knight, Reel 2. Yes. What was the sort of nature of the fighting in your section when you got over the Rhine? You know, what was the sort of German opposition like?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the opposition after we had crossed the Rhine, after the troops were in, across the Rhine in large numbers, the opposition fell away a little bit. I think they must have realised that the game was up, so to speak, and that some regrouping might be necessary if there were to be a counter-attack. And I just have that feeling that after the Rhine was crossed, there were not any major battles as there had been on the other side of the Rhine in Holland and France and so on. I think that from what one reads afterwards, subsequently, that the senior commanders in Germany had realised that things were going very badly, even if Hitler himself was wanting to continue. I think some of the commanders were, in fact, realising that this could be the end, or very nearly the end. In fact, it was only a month, you see, from our crossing the Rhine that we found ourselves in Belsenkamp. Just a month.
Yes, could I ask you about that now, Ken? You know, how it was that you came to be in Belsen, and if you could, you know, describe as fully as possible your journey there and the impressions.
We were at Neustadt we had been at Neustadt for a number of days, and I think I'm right in saying that this was one of the very few occasions when the whole of the unit, like the headquarters and the four sections, had actually been together. The sections had previously been with their groups of tanks, and we were in Neustadt all together from about the middle of March. And as I understand it, there was an urgent message from Brigade Headquarters. No, sorry, not Brigade Headquarters, from Second Army Headquarters, that there had been these negotiations about a dreadful camp in the Belsen area, and I think that from what I read of the colonel's statements, it was the DDMS who had specifically said that 11th Highfield Ambulance and one of the CCSs were to form the spearhead of the approach to Belsen. And we had, I think there are conflicting views as to the time that we were supposed to move off, but certainly within 12 hours we were all packed up and were on our way to Belsen. And we travelled during the night and arrived at Belsen fairly early in the morning. The colonel, of course, had to, or someone, a transport officer perhaps, had to sort out where we were going to park the vehicles and so on, and get the unit functioning as reasonably as possible. The actual work of clearing the camp began with visits by our colonel and the colonel from the CCS and Brigadier Glyn Hughes himself from Second Army, who decided the method of approach for clearing the camp.
Were you involved with that at all? Did you know what was going on?
I knew what was going on because I was in the order room, but I wasn't specifically involved in the detail because so much of it was, in fact, kept reasonably secret in the early stages. But I did know that what the plan of campaign would be, and that there would be dirty ambulances, as they call them, and clean ambulances. And I knew that some of the men of our field ambulance were to be, in fact, the dirty ambulance brigade, if I can put it that way. The reason being that they didn't want to mix the people who were still covered with typhus or any other virulent disease with those that had been cleansed. So they had two lots of ambulances, one to take them from the camp to the to the cleansing up to the cleansing sections, and the other from the cleansing sections to hospital for them.
Did you actually see the camp yourself?
Yes, I went in the camp on the second day that we were there. I went in. I remember going in on a jeep with the Major Prescott and someone from brigade, and although most of the officers were they were medical officers and were tough, it was really very very a very moving experience and something which you really could never forget, and to see the place as it was. And not just to see it, but to sort of be with it. And the stench was dreadful. That's one of the things that I can recall. For obvious reasons, people who had had no opportunity of cleansing themselves or washing themselves or even feeding. It was a dreadful situation.
This would have been Camp One, would it?
Camp One,
yes. But what did it look like, you know, when you went in? Could you sort of describe the scene?
Well, we went through these iron gates, and then there was on either side there were huts which had no windows, or if they had anything at all, it was bits of old tatty cloth and so on to keep some of the wind out. There were people in the camps who were in the lagers who were laying around, unable to move. There were huge piles in one corner. I can remember seeing a huge pile of shoes and clothes, and I gather in another section there were piles of watches and rings and so on which had been taken. But I didn't in fact see them. But they were clearly there because. We knew from reports afterwards of the amount of stuff that had been taken from these from the inmates.
How about bodies? You know, the living and the dead. What did they look like?
They appeared to be in many cases just mixed together. It was extremely difficult to say in some cases which people were living and which were dying or which were on the point of dying. I can remember two youngish people coming up to the jeep and saying English, the equivalent of "please to see you," and then "ich habe a kranker," I am sick. Well, we knew that, of course, but. A sort of a memory that remains. A cracker. I am sick. God, I was well more than sick.
Were there, one hears of babies there. Is that so, that there were people with babies?
There were, yes, but I have to say that I didn't actually see any. I also have to say that I went into the camp that first night, and I went in, I think, on another occasion, but as I have mentioned to you, it wasn't one of my jobs to actually be in the camp proper clearing up. That was the responsibility of my comrades who were nursing orderlies and so on. But there certainly were women who had been taken and put into the camp while they were pregnant and produced babies while they were there. Whether and how far they survived, I don't honestly know, but I would think it's a bit unlikely considering the state of the mothers.
And were men and women kept separately?
They were supposed to be. They were supposed to be, but in the avenue, as it were, between the sheds, the huts. One came across both men and women. I suspect that they had just, when they knew that the camp was relieved, they had just wandered on in where they thought fit and had intermingled, imagining presumably that the nearer they were to the exit, the more likely they were to be released.
Did they look very bad, the people?
Oh yes, they were dreadful. I mean, some of them were had their clothes, so you could see that they were almost like skeletons. Their faces were completely drawn. If they had hair, as many of them did, it was matted and unkempt. Their clothing was basically the black and white pyjama type thing which they wore, which they had to wear, a sort of pyjama looking thing, but some of those were even just in rags. No, it was a dreadful thing to see.
So your job while you were there, you know, you would have been the organisation part of it, would
right.
you? Of
the
yes. Yeah. How are you coping with that? You know, was it a question of getting supplies?
Well, the supplies were in the camp there was in fact a German hospital, because it had the camp had members of the Wehrmacht and the SS, and there was in fact a well equipped hospital in the area, and of course that was those supplies were used, but they were exhausted very quickly. And the colonel and others concerned scoured hundreds of miles around getting supplies from hospitals and chemists and so on. I can remember there appeared to be at one stage a shortage of blankets, and one of the officers, I think the brigadier or someone, said, well, there were 1,600 people in Selly, we were near Selly. You will order to see the burgomaster and say that every family is to produce one blanket. And in fairness, they did. I think they had a few to spare. But this was in fact the way in which supplies and essentials had to be obtained.
Did you get a sense while you were there, Ken, you know, how the camp was improving?
As time went by. Oh yes, yes. I think that after a period of some weeks, there certainly was some semblance of order. The people who had to be evacuated urgently had been evacuated. Those who were not quite so ill were some of them pleased to help in doing the menial tasks. Of course, the wardresses and the others were made to do these things, but there others did it voluntarily, there was after some reasonable time there was a semblance of order in the camp.
Well, what happened to these piles of bodies? You know, so many bodies. Did you have any idea?
Well, the first intention was to give them some form of burial. I mean, it would have to be that they were to be put in communal graves, obviously, and there was no time for coffins or shrouds or anything. And because of the numbers that were discovered, it was eventually decided that they would have to bulldoze a pit. There's nothing other word for it, a pit, and then just bulldoze these bodies into the pit, 5,000 or 6,000 at a time. I think there was one with 10,000, but certainly this was the way in which the bodies had to be disposed of. And that was not a medical unit's job, of course. It was an engineering job, but one couldn't help feeling sorry for the stapper or whoever who had to drive one of these JCBs or whatever it would have been called now, and just to sort of push the bodies into the pits, and then with a simple memorial which said, "Here lies 10,000, 6,000, one of these bodies."
How about the burnings? You know, I understand some of the buildings were burned.
There was a ceremonial burning. I can't say that I saw very much of it at close quarters, except that we did see the smoke and so on in the distance. When we were at Belsen, of course, we were in such lovely country. It was delightful country. A bit like parts of Dorset or the lowlands of Scotland, pine trees and rhododendrons. There was a wonderful field of wild lupins not far away from where we were pitched, and it seemed to be such a sad contrast, all this lovely country, and I suppose they chose this because the people who got to be there, the German troops was on, needed to be fit, didn't they? So presumably they got to have a, anyway, that was very sad.
Did it make much of an impact on your group, you know, the sights you saw?
Yes,
and what
I think we were, particularly as one of the lads died, and four were injured when we were strafed. And
yes, could you tell me more about that, the strafing?
Well, it was early in the morning, and we about 7 o'clock. We were preparing for the day, and there was the unusual noise of four aircraft, and why we couldn't really think that it was going to be British aircraft. And one of them turned round and just sort of let loose with his machine gun on the camp, and then the others came and followed suit. I think there was an official complaint, and I think there was some form of apology, but it didn't alter the fact that we were staffed, and the Red Cross then in the centre of our field really counted for nothing. But that was the only occasion when appeared to be a breach of the convention.
How about German people in the camp? Did you see any evidence of the SS or other?
Oh yes, we did. I remember seeing the guard and the commandant, whose name escapes me at the moment. I remember actually seeing him. He was
Kramer, was
it? That's right, Kramer. He was in shackles. I remember seeing him. I remember seeing the guards. And I remember also seeing the women guards made to help in the hospital where people were being giving elementary washing down. Some of the women guards did that. They also summoned people from the burgomasters and people from the near neighbouring towns to come in and look around to make sure that they knew what was going on. Some of them said they didn't know, of course, but one finds it difficult to believe that if they were aware of train loads of people coming in, that they didn't know what was happening to them.
I suppose really, diet must have been very central to your thinking as medical people.
Oh yes, absolutely right. We were told, in fact, not to give any food to the inmates. They had to have a special diet, and got gradually into feeding normally. And it was for that reason that the service corps people, Major Williams and his people, and so on, scoured the country looking for not only ordinary food but the special kind of food that was needed after these people had been for weeks and months with no proper food. They obviously had to be eased gently into normal feeding again, and that did present problems.
I suppose you came up against that with the medical work, did
that's
you?
That's right. That's right. Mm. Yes, it was soon realised that ordinary rations were no use, and that the doctors, from their experience and so on, had to make sure that the right sort of food was given to the people at the right time.
Mm. Did the fact that so many of the people were so emaciated, as you've described so well, did this present any problems for medicine, you know, giving them medicines?
Yes. I didn't have any personal experience of this, but I know it to be the fact that the feeding of these people had to be very, very closely controlled. And that it was just not possible to have mass feeding early on.
And I suppose medicines the same, drugs, would that apply?
Yes. There were some medicine and drugs in the German hospital, but nowhere near enough. And it was one of the jobs of the service corps people to get in the right sort of drugs from Germany. I think probably some were also brought in from this country, but in the early stages it was a matter of finding what one could urgently and immediately.
How about the typhus? You know, what sort of protection did you have, particularly when you went into the camp?
Well, nobody went into the camp that was not wearing some protective clothing, a bit like the old denims that were one wore for training. And no one went in either without having had a typhus inoculation. We had ours at the time we knew we were going, nobody went in without a squirt of DDT under both arms and up the trouser leg, and this applied to everyone. I mean, there was no question of this chap's a general, so he needn't bother. One of our fellows, I can remember, Bill Barrett, was one of the operators for a considerable time of the DDT squirter, and he regaled us with some very humorous stories of people who had undone their blouse so that they could have a squirt up the arm and down the trouser. It was really sad, but humorous, very humorous. I can't say about ladies, because I don't think in the early stages there were too many ladies around, but the same would have applied, you know. There might have been a lady, I suppose, who squirted the lady, but they nevertheless had to have their dose of DDT.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because now people are so careful, aren't they, with DDT?
Yes, I mean, this was I suppose, if we knew then what we know now, we'd have used something else, but DDT was the thing, I think. That was really quite sad, but really quite humorous.
Did you ever hear of any cases of cannibalism? Before
I heard of it, yes. And there was evidence, there's no doubt about it, that people discovered bodies that had teeth marks in the fleshy parts or such as remained. I can't say personally saw it, but I'm quite sure that it happened, and that with the mixture of the dead and the not so ill that I mentioned earlier, there's a possibility that if you think you're going to save yourself by chewing flesh, then you will.
So how long would you have been there altogether?
We stayed in Belsen, and we stayed there 7 weeks, 7 weeks, and then we were sent to Norway. I think our colonel going into the medical job in persuading the powers that be that we needed some form of resuscitation, and we went to Norway.
So, you know, that's quite a long time, isn't it? 7 weeks.
Oh, yes.
You must have seen, you know, quite a few changes in that time.
Yes.
What was it like when you left, compared with the beginning, do you think?
Well, it was the worst of the squalor was almost over. People had begun to get back to life. There were some lovely photographs of taken by the army kinematograph unit, I think, of younger children or younger people who had been nursed back to health, and there was one I remember with Major Lancaster and others. And so we left, I think, feeling that without some blowing one's trumpet, that we'd done a good job. We'd been sent there to do it, and I think we achieved it very successfully. I remember the colonel saying in his order of the day that there had never been anything quite like it in the history of war, and I'm sure that was right. There had never been anything that the RAMC had, not just the 11th Light Ambulance, but all the other units, and in fact the voluntary organisations had been called upon to do, and that the Second Army commanders and those involved, and I suppose even politicians, were satisfied that an excellent job had been done.
Were there any sort of social events there while you were, if that isn't too flippant a word?
No, there were, yes, we had half a dozen of the people in the unit were good musicians, and there were dances and there were parties and so on in the barracks, which were the Wehrmacht barracks, which were really first class. They were very good. The facilities there were excellent. Oh yes, there were these. There were social occasions, but towards the end, not in the early stages. I mean, I think it was about a 10 or 12 hour day in the early stages, and there was no time for social events. But after it was over, after the worst was over, then yes, we did participate in these things, which was football matches, of course, and cricket matches and so on. Life continued.
And would they have included the DPs? I know you called them.
There were some, yes. DPs, that's right, yes, that's right. There were some, those that were better. And of course there were people there from all nations. I mean, some of the doctors were Czech and Poles and so on. I think that caused a little bit of problem in the early stages, because I think the Czech doctors thought that the Czech inmates ought to have priority, but of course they didn't. They were sorted out in absolute fairness. Oh yes, it was. After the shock of it, you got the feeling of, well, let's get on with it, and then towards the end, the feeling of, well, we can perhaps relax a little bit.
How about padres? Were there, or rabbis? You know, because I suppose, you know, the majority of these people would have been Jewish.
They were, yes, they were Jewish. There were, in fact, padres of various faiths. We had a Catholic for some time, who was our padre, a devoutly chap. And there were, of course, the ministers of religion. Some of them, of course, were internees, or had been internees.
And the Jewish rabbis, were they important, would you think?
I'm sure they must have been extremely important elements in the life of the camp after the relief had begun. Yes.
Were there any sort of services did they hold that you knew of?
There were services periodically. Yes, we ourselves had a service two or three times in those weeks, and we also participated in a service of Thanksgiving at the end, which was conducted by the padre of our own padre and a padre of one of the Second Army groups.
Yes. Yes, that must have been moving.
Very moving indeed. Yes, it was very moving. Particularly the open air service, which was held at the time of VE Day. That was a very moving service.
Yes, yes, that must have been quite a place to have been in.
Oh,
in
yes.
VE Day. Do you remember hearing about it and how the news was sort of broadcast to people?
Yes.
And the reaction?
Yeah, and we did have our own a few of us had sort of radios that we'd relieved from various places. We also had a portable telephone, I remember. And as we went through some of the towns in Germany, we were playing records, including Jim Winnable, who I think will know more about this than I, including the Gagan Ingerland. We actually played that to the Germans, and they sort of couldn't understand where. With his ridiculous sense of humour.
So VE Day, what actually happened? You know, what was the sort of atmosphere like in Belsen?
Oh, it was great relief. There were extra official rations, I think, and there were certainly extra rations which were unofficial, and drink and so on. It was I can't remember any actual drunkenness at all, unless it was someone who wasn't used to it. But it was a very good day, the V day, yes, very good.